Do it now.
Say it now.
Welcome back, everyone, to episode 24 of TabuCast, part of the Virgin Wales Collective. With me, as always, is my co-host, Matt.
Hello.
This week, we've got a few things to get into. We're going to discuss the news, of course, with regards to Deployment 8 and Deployment 9. We're going to discuss our little boxing tournament we had in the week, Project Immersion. I've got a listener email to read out. We're going to announce the competition winner. I'm also going to have a little interview with a demolitionist player as a little bit of a class discussion for you. And another little rant from me and Matt about our ideas for TR. So there's plenty of stuff to go through there. So how was your week, Matt?
It was pretty busy, yeah. Had my last exam of the year. Woo!
Wow. Is that like your last bit of work for the year then?
No. Still doing my dissertation.
That same dissertation?
That same dissertation. Who would have thought that the AI for a multiplayer networked game would be so difficult?
But it's interesting, though.
So interesting, yes. But yeah. I may not need to cover it ever again in my life.
Okay. Not working out so well, then.
No, it's fine. It's just, it's hard learning it for the first time and trying to implement it.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's a bit of a tricky subject. I mean, just from playing games, I can see how difficult it is for developers to get AI right.
Meow.
Yeah. But, you know, I'll see. One day you'll tell me you've made this wonderful out there pixie game and we'll have a little look and see what you've come up with.
You'll come tear it to shreds.
No, not at all.
Rip their wings off.
I've had a pretty good week. TR's been so much fun this week. We had our little boxing tournament, which I'll talk about in a bit. And I've been catching up on quests and stuff. But mostly exploring, really, as part of the immersion project. Again, we'll talk about that in a bit. But I've been more sort of sightseeing in TR than anything this week. And sort of just hanging out with people and just sort of chatting. And it's really nice to see the community side of things still pretty strong in TR. So I've been enjoying that side of it. Rather than actual gameplay, if that makes sense.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, it's considering some of the bad vibes go around the certain corners of the interwebs. It is good to see that people are still enjoying the game. We're still getting a small flux of new players coming in and whatever, yeah. And everyone's sort of generally fairly happy.
Yeah. I mean, talking about new players, I mean, if we jump straight into the news, there's a lot of trials available. Over on rgtr.com. So if you know someone that's interested in getting a trial, previously there was not many trials at all. I mean, I managed to get some to give away, and you can do them part of like your buddy key system. But actually, if you go over to rgtr.com, there is a lot of websites offering trials at the moment. So if you have a look on there, you'll be able to see sort of which site to go to depending on what part of the world you're in.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so it'd be good to get this influx, and I think that's something they're really sort of pushing at the moment, where we had like the comeback weekend and the you know, the free time and stuff lately. I think they're really trying to push that, which is good.
Yay, more people for us to play with.
Corrupt.
Yeah.
So Deployment 8 went live. Now, of course, there's going to be a few things that we need to pick out of this rather long, fantastic list. Deployment 8 covers, you know, 8.2, 8.3 and 8.4 that we saw on test, and it's all live now. So sort of a few of the things that I've picked out of this, really. I mean, if you look at the armor changes they've made some, you know, avatar changes to the bio and mech armor. And they've been optimizing these. I know why you're laughing. To increase performance and frame rate. But during the process, they actually made female armor look more feminine. Now, between you and me, more feminine equals bigger boobs, doesn't it, Matt?
Certainly seems to. I don't understand how my bio and exo can actually stand up anymore. I just logged it. It was a complete shock.
They have enhanced certain feminine areas of the body, haven't they? It's yeah, and it's worked. They do look more feminine, without a doubt.
Yeah, I'm not even sure it was even in question in those armors.
No, and it's kind of I said to you, didn't I? I said it was funny that they did this around the sort of time that Conan came out. Maybe it was a plea for the booby fans to be kept happy in TL.
Point of interest: John mentioned Conan long before I did.
Oh dear! Right. So yeah, that was an interesting side of it. I mean, there's been a lot of changes to maps and missions. A large chunk of the maps and mission stuff is, you know, the usual sort of bug fixes and balancing to missions. But I mean, it should be pointed out though that there were a few things that are quite important in this patch. I mean, the magma caverns has been redesigned with new map layout and new consensus missions. So basically you can choose to which side you want to side with right at the start of these consensus missions. So you can either side with the Penumbra or with the Renegade faction. So the decision takes into account whatever the squad majority is, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's great.
And quite a big thing on this is that the choice mission at the start is repeatable. So if you choose to do one side of the mission, you can then go back and do the other side.
Yay!
I did like read that at first as repeatable and thought, you know, more repeatable content, core, this is what we're starting to look for, but it was only repeatable once.
Oh, that's good.
But it's still good. It's still very good. The other thing is that Flashpoint mission, this is the only sort of fix I wanted to pick out, really, is that the Flashpoint mission Predator Hunt has been fixed, so you actually have to take part in it now.
Aww. I was just going around and collecting pieces of armour.
Yeah, because you could just sort of log in and just be in the right area, get that flashpoint and accept it, and sort of within a few minutes you've completed it, haven't you?
Yeah, it's great.
It's pretty funny. And they've added another new flashpoint in Palisades, and this has been added in amongst all the other sort of fixes and stuff. So there was that. We had some combat changes, quite a few combat changes. I mean, if you think about it, we've probably covered a lot of these, but there are now critical effects for EMP, virulent and electrical attacks. The EMP crit effect will shut down the target's armor for a short time, and the virulent crit will place a small snare on the target, and electric will have an arc similar to lightning. So it's pretty cool.
Cool.
Yeah. There are now these things called combat floaties. So when a character or player is immune or resists debuffs and certain game effects, so like if a player in Graviton armor resisted a knockback, there would be no indication of that. Now there will be a resist message.
That's good.
So it's a nice little quality of life change. They've been playing about with the target lock and a player's field of view. So it's that sort of kind of change to allow players greater control when in combat. I really noticed that when I was playing about, actually. That was quite a nice little tweak.
So, yeah.
I mean, you no longer lose your target's lock. So, you know, if your target moves off screen, it stays locked. You know, so if you tab lock a target, you can fire at them even when they're off screen from you, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, we were playing about still trying to get you a few levels. And it took me a while to remember the fact that I could lock on to you and lock on to my enemy, and which makes it switching to healing you, as I so often did, much, much easier. But no, yeah. I that's such a nice change.
Yeah. And on the healing thing, that's because I get stuck into the action so much, isn't it?
Yes. So,
whatever you say. But they do need to remain in front of you, don't they? So you can't, like, you know, lock onto somebody and walk off the other direction and still be able to shoot them. So it's like a 180-degree view sort of thing, which is fairly reasonable, I think.
Yeah, I think that's plenty.
And they've put in a target reacquisition system. So the targeting system will remember the last hostile and friendly you've locked onto. So that's kind of going in with what you were saying. You know, so when you switch to a direct targeted weapon or ability, it will automatically reacquire the appropriate target.
Good times.
Cool. Yeah. So, like you say, you can use repair tools for that. And, you know, if you switch to your gun and then you go back switching back, it's already locked on, which is a really nice touch. So they're pretty cool. And then, of course, we've got the class changes, which we've talked about, really. I mean, you've got the specialist. So decay has been changed to ruin to give specialists a unique and effective combat ability. Ruin now costs an appropriate amount of adrenaline. So rank one is called rot and places a small virulent dot on the target. The amount of damage is similar to the old decay three. And you've got rank two, which is rust, places a small EMP dot on the target, and the amount is similar to the old decay three again. And then rank three, which places a more powerful virulent dot on the target, and rank four places an even more powerful EMP dot on the target, and then rank five, which is called conflagrate.
Conflagrate? I don't know.
Yeah.
Burning things.
Conflagrate. Burn him. It's basically fire damage on the target, as well as a snare with that one. So that's a nice little change there.
I'm really looking forward to testing that out on my specialists. Because I tend... Actually, this is the same with pretty much all my characters in TR. I tend not to use abilities so much.
Mm.
It's mostly all about the combat.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand. I think they are definitely changing that to make each class a more varied experience. It'd be interesting to see the long-term plans for that. So, yeah, just going on to the sapper, crab mines are now more responsive. They acquire targets sooner, chase them earlier, and explode faster, which is cool. and then the demolitionist, which we're going to go and discuss with a demolitionist player later on today, had a few changes. Self-destruct is now a toggle ability, so they have greater control over that. I'm guessing that means you can turn it off. I don't want to self-destruct anymore.
Boom.
And the casting times for all ranks of controlled fission, reality ripper, and explosive nanites has been reduced to 1 second.
I don't know what they were before. I don't have a demolitionist.
I shall find out later.
Yeah.
The ranger... will have fire support ranks 1, 3 and 5 easier to use. Players would be required to pass several line of sight checks for those beacons to be placed, and these have now been loosened somewhat, so should be easier to pull that ability off.
Excellent.
So those are the sort of the things along those lines. I mean, we weren't really sort of expecting sort of any surprises with the class changes there at all, and of course we've got the Shredder ammo stuff, which was in 8.4, which we talked about last week, that is actually now live. So you know, you've got the various level of those with different sort of cast times, as it were. So they're actually all live now, and we also got our boxing ring, didn't we? We got the cellar,
yeah,
which was in this patch, which is just huge amounts of fun. So so the cellar arena, which stands for Coalition of Enlistees Looking. Likely looking for aggressive retaliation, is now available for players. And basically, if you haven't used it, what you can do is you can go to it's in most barracks, there's a teleport that you can jump into the arena, and you go in there and you can go down to a arena vendor and you can buy a set of boxing gloves, boxing shorts and headgear, and jump into the ring, and it's pretty good fun. we had
pretty
a little
good
tournament,
fun to understatement.
We had a little tournament in our clan where basically we decided that we'd all roll a character, skip the tutorial and get them to level 4, so we were all on the same level, kind of like they do for Friday night fights. Equip ourselves with the boxing gloves and everything like that, and then pump up to level 3 hand to hand, which
some of us pumped up. Some of us weren't told we could pump up.
Well, that kind of came about. We weren't going to do it, but then a couple of players did it by accident, and so we had to all pump it up to make it fair. But then you arrived late, didn't you, Matt? So we forgot to tell you.
Scum. I would have won, but damn it.
Another thing I noticed, though, is that you put on the boxing gloves, and the boxing gloves, they're like a weapon, aren't they?
Yeah.
So when you equip them like a weapon. So if you're not paying attention to what the other person's got on, it actually goes over their armor gloves. So they can keep their armor gloves on if they're not careful, if you're trying to be fair in that, which was something we observed. And then there was the blatantly obvious people that forgot to take their boots off and stuff like that.
I like that.
But it was good fun. So there was like, there was only eight of us, and we sort of did a little few rounds, and we sort of played that down a round at a time, and you know, and then the winner of that round went through to the next one, and it was pretty good, wasn't it?
Yeah, I got smacked around for left and left for dead in the first round.
And then we have that massive free for all boxing at the end, which was quite crazy.
It was like that was great.
Bar fight. But no, good fun, and it's a great way to you know, sort of do something else, and it's quite a social event, and it was hilarious, and people started coming in and watching, and it was really good. I really enjoyed doing that.
Yeah, we should do that more often. I think we should settle all disputes inside the clan with a box.
That's a good idea. We should do that.
I think that would work.
And of course, we've got the Prestige now as well, haven't we? Prestige is in game. This is in line for the control point. Clan-owned control points that are coming, so you can actually gain prestige now and trade in all your own old tokens for prestige, which seems to work very well. And the amount of people chatting about prestige in general and sort of getting excited about collecting it tells me that there is a big interest in these clan-owned control points, and that people are collecting it now, ready for these.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It seems to be definitely a popular thing to do at the moment. So I expect a few of the larger clans are keen to get out there and start owning some of the better points.
Yeah, I think the first couple of days when clan and control points come in, not just because of the bugs, but because of the fighting, is going to be really, really intense.
Oh yeah, definitely. And the prestige tab is on your sort of character sheet now. And if you're looking for your logos tab, it's actually been put onto an Intel screen off the radial menu. So if you can't find that, it's been moved over to there. So yeah, we're getting ready for those. It seems it's nice to sort of see the prestige in. It's seems to be a winning form of currency. So I can't wait to start using that.
Yeah, it'll be great. I've just noticed something interesting, John.
What's that, mate?
In our patch notes, which we managed to miss, the possibly most important thing on there.
Okay, go on.
Enemies inside operations will now drop rare loot more often.
Wow, okay. So something I've been craving is rare loot.
I think that's something a lot of people have been craving.
Yeah, and actually that's interesting, because I was listening to sort of observing general chat the other day, and someone said, oh, something's just dropped to purple, you know, Chain Gun of Doom or whatever. And it was, and that's interesting, because I don't normally hear people say that. So that's obviously... increased a little bit there, and that is, God, that's just chucked in with the notes quite slyly, isn't it? That's I think that's quite a big thing.
I think it is. I think I've only picked up on average about one purple a week since I started playing again back in March.
Interesting. Oh, I hope to see more changes to the loot table. I think that's quite a biggie.
Yeah, hopefully when the loot table gets sorted out, it might sort out military surplus market a bit as well.
Let's hope so. I suppose that goes hand in hand with the crafting again.
Ah, oh, crafting. Wherefore art thou crafting?
So this week's Feedback Friday, of course, as soon as we have a deployment or a patch dropped onto live server, we get talk of the next patch. So straight away, as ever, this Feedback Friday was about deployment 9. So it talks about a feature called Squad Merge, which is basically allows you to merge squads when you're, you know, out and about, and you want to say there's two of us in one group, and you want to, and you see another little small group, and you want to merge them together. You'd have to disband one group and invite the others and get it all organised. And there's now going to be a feature to deal with that. So it's part of the ongoing looking for squad system, I think, that they're introducing. So I guess with the Clando control point changes and stuff like that that are coming, this is going to be crept in at the same sort of time as those, rather than, you know, after them. It seems to be something they're chucking in small amounts of each little system at a time.
Yeah.
So there's a little example of how this works, and they use the two people called Bob and Susie. So should we change those to John and Matt? Who do you want? Do you want to be Susie or do you want to be Bob?
Ooh, Susie!
So So let's say that, okay. So let's say that I invite Matt and her squad to join my squad. I can do an invite, a slash invite to you, or you can do a slash join, and it will add a request to join squad option in the menu that appears when you right click their name. And it will just sort of disband one squad and put them all into the other. So that's pretty nice, really. Pretty nice quality of life change.
Yeah, I mean, I keenly remember around about the first clan night I got involved in with Mog. We were on air, I think it might have been the second, we decided we were going to do Devil's Den.
Yeah.
And we literally spent 40 minutes dancing around with the different groups, trying to get people into the right groups because we had two groups doing it at the same time. And it was ridiculous.
It's surprising how such a simple task can actually take so long to sort out.
Yeah, I mean, we're all in guild chat as well. I mean, if I'm being in the same room or whatever, we're all on the same chat channel.
And I think that's a good point, though. We were all in the guild chat. I mean, imagine how much easier that's going to make it for, pickup groups and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'm hoping there might, maybe we'll actually see some more pickup groups now.
Yeah, let's hope so. And also, in this deployment, they sort of began, in the last deployment, they began releasing some content to the public marked as PTS only, which is to get more testing, like they said with the level command and things like that, of where you get leveled up and you get cash. Well, they're going to take advantage of this on latest map, which they've got on PTS, which is the Velen Hollow, formerly known as Howling Death Burrow. We talked about that before, didn't we? And this is in Plateau and it's for levels 30 to 32. So they're going to sort of implement these systems in line with that on test, so you can test out this map, which is pretty cool. But the map will be marked on and flagged as PTS only. So I guess that means it won't be scheduled to the live server until something like deployment 10. But that's good.
Yeah.
Some good stuff to hear.
I think there needs to be more testing and stuff. I think people should get more involved in it.
Yeah. Have you heard about this other thing as well? There's a on the PTS that, in addition to the credits and the sort of the auto leveling NPC, they've added some new vendors to allow players to purchase both skill and attribute respecs and grey market items, they call them. And these grey market items are like experimental grade tools, weapons, and armor that are more comparable to your live characters' items. So, essentially they're random loot drops that you can buy for levels 30, 40, and 50.
Nice.
So it makes testing the game out a lot easier, and it shows that they are devoted to the cause. So
yeah, I had heard some people complaining about the fact that, yay, now we can level up to 50 and run around butt naked as the day we were born.
Only on test.
Well.
So the other thing I picked out of the news that as important was that over on Warcry, they had a Q&A with Tom Potter, the new lead designer.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, so I'll put a little link up in the show notes. But and there's a few things they answered over there, but these are the things that I picked out. So they asked, have many players been interested in Logos? Are they using it as Richard Garriott originally intended? So the reply by Tom is, conceptually, the idea of Logos has been pretty consistent with Richard's initial vision, since, as you may know, he invented the whole system. For those who aren't familiar, Logos is an alien language that players encounter throughout the Tabula Rasa in various forms. We currently use Logos as prerequisites to owning skills, as keys to open specific locked doors, and as keys to unlock reliquaries full of loot. Logos can also be found imprinted on various artifacts throughout the world. Some players may have discovered that these artifacts tell stories about the world around them. So I think Richard's initial vision of Logos as the way to convey information about an alien society through discovery and as a codebreaker minigame of sorts has been realised. But I think there is still a lot of room for exploration, he says. Actually, we're considering ways to use Logos in some of Tabula Rasa's other game systems so that they have an even more important role in the game. I think there is a lot of mileage here. So that's quite interesting because they are there, but really to me they don't serve a huge purpose other than, you get this and then you can have this ability. Which is cool, because it's not like you can't just be awarded abilities at trainers all the time, or you know, like a traditional MMO. And I do like this whole sort of ancient artifact style of gaming, and I love seeing them about, and you know, the visual clues they give. And you know, if you go up to that tree on Memory Hill, I'm sure if you sat down and read that, there'd be a story on that tree or something.
Oh yeah. I mean, there's all those obelisks scattered about all the different levels as well. I'm sure they say something interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, to think that they will, sort of, because there's plenty of spare ones as well, to think that there'd be a way that they could bring this into other areas. Maybe the crafting system they're looking at? Don't know.
Yeah, it could be. He's right, though. There is a lot of mileage. They could do so much with it.
So it'd be good to see the advantage of those. So the next question that I liked was quite a brave question, really, and it came from Warcry, and it said, obviously the game didn't sell as well as NCSoft would have liked. Do they have a plan to help the game grow on a different curve, similar to how Eve did after its launch? Now, if anyone remembers, Eve did exactly the same sort of thing. It launched, it did well for the first month or two, then it dropped, and now it's got this steady growth curve, you know, on its subscriptions. And I think that I predict that the way that TR is going to go. I really do feel positively that we're actually on the up now, and you know, they're doing everything can, and all these changes and these plans that are now coming will bring the subscription curve up to a really solid level. But the answer from Tom Potter on this was, you learn a lot about your game once it's unleashed for the public. And we've definitely learned a lot since launch. I think now, perhaps even more than ever, the team knows more about what they need to do to keep both existing players happy and to acquire new players. The importance of polished releases is constantly on our minds. As the service has evolved, we have learned much from the community about what features are most important to them and what keeps them coming back for more. We knew control points would be popular, but it wasn't until the game went live that we truly appreciated the potential for elaborating on the design. Our general plan is to A, continue regular updates to the game to improve quality of life issues and refine the existing design, and B, add new features that enhance the existing game. For example, we're currently working on a number of PvE, PvP and group play balance issues, improving general performance, improving pet AI, and adding new instance maps. We're also working on new features like the clan-owned control point concept, where members of clans can own territory within the game and acquire gameplay bonuses for their ownership. And they're looking for squad system to allow players to find groups more easily. And then, of course, we have a ton of new features that we're working on, like personal armor units, PAUs, that will come online in the future. So he doesn't really say anything new there, but he has acknowledged. He hasn't said, no, the game is doing fine. There's nothing wrong with our game. he has said, yeah, you know, we've learnt a hell of a lot from what's happened to the game. So I love Tom. I think he's great.
Oh, dear Lord.
You love him too. So the final one that I picked out as one for us to talk about here was about Richard Garriott. So they asked, how key a role has Richard Garriott played in the game's design post-release? And I thought that was quite huge, because he stuck his name on this thing and he had had a big part of it, but then he just disappeared.
Yeah.
So they Tom replied, as you may know, Richard is preparing for his lifelong dream of going to space. Well, if you don't know that, hello. And he says that requires an amazing amount of training, so he's been spending a lot of time overseas. Since he can't be involved in the critical day-to-day operations of running a live service, he has taken on a more creative advisor role for the time being. That said, he has still been in regular contact with us, so he's still around, albeit from Russia at times. So he does have an input, from what I can gather, and I have heard that from critters before and from other people sort of directly. Yes, he's going into space, he's not going to have the time, but it'd be nice to think when he comes back maybe he does take up, you know, a bit more of a role in this game.
Yeah, that was the vibe I got from that. Other than the the absurd picture of him.
Yeah,
I love it. But
I'm in anti-gravity.
Yeah, no, that's the feeling I got from that sort of when he does his thing, and you know, good for him to be able to do something that he's always wanted to do, and whatever he may come back.
Yeah, absolutely. So Matt, last week we talked about our Project Immersion.
Yeah.
And I've been having some fun with this, but basically, so last episode we decided that we would try and mess about with trying to get immersed in the universe by you know, not looking at hints outside of the game, and you know, being able to ask people and talk to people only when they're actually sort of near you in your vicinity, and try and take on a more immersive role in this game. Now, the thing that I've done this week to start the ball rolling with this is I turned off all my waypoints on my map.
Yep.
And I didn't realise quite how much I depended on those, because they were, you just press M, look for the shiny radio icon and just head towards it, and easy as that. So what I've actually done is I've actually started reading the quests from a point of, okay, it says go find these near here. So they say go to the radio tower or something. So I'd open up my map, look for where I think the radio tower is, and run there, you know, without looking for the actual waypoint or where it is, and then hunt around that area for it. And it's been so much more fun. It's been really a great way to sort of look around and take in more, rather than just going from A to B. I'm actually sort of picking up on other things in the area, so it actually makes it easier, because when another quest comes up and says, oh, go and get these from, you know, such and such camp, I'll go, oh, I just saw that, and I know where to go. So it is actually making me take it in. Whereas with waypoints, you kind of rely on level design and where the devs have led you to see other things yourself. So it's an interesting way of using it. I'm definitely going to try and sort of enhance this over the next week or so. How about you, Matt?
Yeah. The first thing you've got to do in this game is turn the waypoints off. I find you appreciate the landscape. Just even on a purely aesthetic level, everything around you, you appreciate it so much more. You seem to have more time to look around at it because you're not just following a little carrot on a stick.
It's really good. I haven't taken it further than that because I did actually want to. Oh God, sounds awful. I wanted to sort of speed up my leveling a bit this week, so I did it for a mixed part of the week. And of course, the boxing ring has taken a lot of my attention. But I thought, I wasn't quite sure when I announced this last week how many people would actually be interested in it. And quite a few people are. And I've got an email here from Sasha. And basically they've said, you know, they've been thinking about this idea for some time now. And contacting the devs on this would probably take months and months before it sees any implementation. Still, it can find its way into other player-run projects like the immersion, like we've been doing. And he sort of said, you know, if you go into a base and you discharge a firearm in a military base, you know, so that they can imagine being court-martialed for this. You know, so unless you're hunting Bane forces in AFS bases, it would be really inappropriate to fire your equipment, you know, around in the base. So, you know, maybe a new level character 2 or level 3 had a rule attached to it. So no discharging of weapons in AFS controlled bases, which I thought was quite an interesting little touch to this project. You know, imagine that if we had like court martialing in the game, in some sort of system for that.
that would be awesome. That actually straight away reminds me of a little SWG memory.
Oh, go on.
For the life of me, I can't remember what the race was called, but I was playing the fishy headed character. My friend had been playing SWG.
The Mon Calamari.
That was it. And my friend had been playing SWG for a while, and he had some rank with the Imperials, whatever. And he basically went up to one of the Imperial officers and slapped them. Because he was a colonel or something, and they basically begged for forgiveness and whatever. He said, "See, look, you try it." So I slapped them. And on comes, they beat me to the ground with the butt of the gun and shoot me dead. Which was some punishment for insubordination.
Yeah. But there you go. There's that system in place. So why not? He also goes on to say here that if you did a slash sit command in the middle of an AFS command center, a military base in sort of general, it would seem quite annoying. So if you're running around and managing dozens of panels, when you suddenly sort of trip over some hippies, he says, mate, on the floor, that wouldn't really be allowed. So that sort of thing should be restricted to hospital beds, barracks, and everything outside AFS bases and bars. So, you know, Bane controlled bases shooting is preferred. So, you know, it's quite a good little idea. I like that. So I think if if that was in game, or even if you just did that yourself as part of your own immersion project, it could definitely add something to the realism factor.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, it's good. It also says here, and I'm not entirely sure if this was for discussion on the show, but I wanted to mention it anyway, is that he's thinking about having the AFS logo and wings tattooed on an appropriate spot.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that was quite cool. I actually have considered that myself. I do like the logo and the wings, but I don't know where I'd have it and, you know, if I was brave enough to have it. It's quite a...
Tattoos are addictive.
They are addictive, I agree. I mean, yeah, I've got one and I thought about it for a really long time before I did it. And I have actually thought about this logo. It is a nice little logo, but it's whether or not you're brave enough to have that.
Well, yeah, I mean... I thought about it and I thought, well, say 10 or 20 years down the line when TR's long gone.
Mm. But but then it's a memory, isn't it? It's like we have a good time playing it and it's kind of like that part of your life. I always see tattoos a bit like that. I've actually got a Rebel Alliance symbol on my left arm from Star Wars.
Awesome. Yeah, as long as you stop at the symbols and don't like get a massive Richard Garriott tattooed around your left nipple
or
something.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
With his thumbs up and floating in space. He does go on to say here that the things he's concerned about with his tattoo, which I don't think he needs to be concerned about at all, is that they look like the logo is actually very similar to a South African fascist movement logo.
Oh, dear Lord.
But I looked at it, and I don't think it is that similar. I think it's quite different. So I don't think you need to worry about that one. And the second part is that the wings are they're like war part, like of medals and things like that, aren't they? And I just think they're a really nice combo, and they look really, really good. I mean, there are like the Black Ops sort of variation of it with the skull behind. Have you seen that one?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you're into that sort of thing, that would be quite a cool one as well. So yeah, go for it. But don't go for it just because I said so on a podcast. Go for it because you want to.
Yeah. We waive all responsibility.
Yeah. But thanks for your email. That was great. We had a few entries for our haiku competition. In the end, we had about 30 entries, which was quite a nice little amount. So thanks to everyone who entered the haiku competition. And basically, it was the opportunity to win a professional drawing done by a comic book artist at one of the NCSoft events. The up-and-coming event is at the UK Games Expo on the 31st of May to the 1st of June. That NCSoft will be there with Rock Jaw and his team. So always a great way to meet them and meet the comic book artist behind a lot of the games. And always a nice little event to go to when they're there. So check that out. And if you want more information, you can go to ukgamesexpo.co.uk. But yeah, so we do have a lucky winner. Now, how we judge this competition is we all picked our favourite each out of the entries. So that's me, Matt and Sean. And then we chose between them. But ironically, me and Sean chose the same one. I must admit, Matt, I did like the one you chose. It was hilarious.
They were all massively entertaining.
They were brilliant. We had some great entries. There were a few that we decided were great but not really winning material because they were like haikus about subscription fees and things like that, which were brilliant. But the one that won, and we really thought it was great between us, I'll read it out. It's, "We will come home soon. Earth is not lost forever. Let us rock and roll." And I thought that was quite cool. You thought that was cheesy, didn't you, mate?
Yeah, it's good, but I get enough cheese on pizza, thank you.
You like the one with the reference to How out of Space 2001, didn't you?
That was
2001. That was a good one. I'll have to dig that out. Maybe I'll read that out next week. But that entry was from a guy called Farspace, so congratulations, you are the winner.
Woo!
And you have received an email letting you know that, and we'll get your artwork sent off to Rockjaw so he can take it and get your picture done for you. So congratulations, you're very lucky. Just a note on the drawings that you can have done at these things. I saw one recently on Rockjaw's blog, to theblogmobile.com, and it was someone had done one of Optimus Prime, and then they'd given it to they've got now on hand, they've got these digital colourers who will colour them in as well. And it looked really, really good. It was like the best Optimus Prime drawing I've seen in a long, long time. It was really, really sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah, it was good. So I'm going to have to take mine along to get that coloured at some point. So following on from last week, you know, we had a little bit of a ramble about things we wanted in game and that we thought were good ideas, and we talked about, you know, maybe monster play and bits and bobs like that.
I certainly did, John.
I've had so much positive feedback about that in my email box. I mean, so many people have said that they just enjoyed us rambling about these things. And I, because I thought that, yeah, okay, this is just me and you sort of massaging our sort of conversation, really. We just wanted to talk about this ourselves, so why not talk about it on the show? And we've had so much positive feedback about that section, Matt. So I am challenging you today to another little ramble. And you're going to have to bear with me on this. I wanted to talk to you about the possibility of introducing time travel into Tabula Rasa. So, all right, bear with me. Do you want me to sort of explain my thoughts on this?
Please, John, do.
Okay, so, you know, I was thinking about how, the way this came about is I was thinking about how, you know, if we were to return to Earth in this game, how could they do it in such a way that didn't take us away from, you know, the game enjoyment we get now? And I was playing a bit of City of Heroes because they've just reactivated inactive accounts over there for a few days. So I jumped in there, and they currently, in that game, City of Heroes, they do time travel so well. And it allows players to reenact, you know, famous hero events from the backstory. So this got me thinking, why can't we reenact some of those cool intro screens we see in the game? So, you know, maybe an instance where we jump back to Earth at the time the Bane invaded, and when we were trying to make it to those first sort of wormholes before Earth got totally destroyed, or whatever happened to it. So that was one idea, like a little instance which was like you running for your life, you know, and where you sort of first discover that you know, this is the bigger scheme of things, and that you're now fighting for the survival of the human race. So that was one thing that popped into my head.
Cool.
Yeah, you can't say much more than that, can you?
Well, no, it does. I'm just thinking about it. It would be really cool, and it would be, I'm sure it would be lots of fun, and it would be good for sort of for the building the backstory and sort of getting people really into the story as it is. But how they manage people, would you like be controlling a completely different character, or would you be? Because I can't remember how prevalent the receptives were before the mass exodus and whatever.
I think that was kind of like how we found out about it, wasn't it, at that point? So it'd be interesting to see, you know, if that was something that could be sort of played around with. It's just an idea, you know. And the other sort of possibility I had was, you know, and you've got to bear with me again on this, because I've been thinking a lot about the social aspect of games and how that can be improved upon. And I thought, you know, what if, so you jump back to Earth at a time when all was well? Okay, so I was wondering how that would actually work, because, you know, if you think about it, that's completely the opposite of what TR is all about. It's the game's all about battling and fighting, and, you know, if all was well, you haven't even become a soldier yet. So it made me think about, you know, the home thing on the PS3 network?
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a player's private space where they have an apartment, and you can invite friends over for like social areas. And I kind of thought, yeah, that's all right, but that sucks, really. So I kind of canned the idea at that point and then moved back on to taking that social idea back into the current TR universe. So, you know, it'd be cool if you had like a social home or barrack style area in a game that you can invite other people over to, I don't know, play virtual poker or pool or something like that. But it's more of a social side to the game, like this home network thing on PS3. So it's kind of like a 3D MySpace, Gax, sit on my Facebook, something like that. And basically, you know, it sort of comes into our game. It's part of the universe, but a non-combat side of it. And it sort of might give the game a bit more longevity. And if people are socializing in these areas and then go off to, you know, battle a control point or go and do some quests together, it might feel a bit sort of richer and fuller, because people spend a lot of time on these social sites and interaction when they're not gaming. So why not just spend all of your time doing it all in one place?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I think the anywhere that is going to be almost entirely social in this game has to be a large area where everyone can be. Mm-hmm. Because we do have a a lowish population, though we are growing or whatever, do you want to keep as much as that population in the same kind of places as possible, not subdividing them off? Otherwise, it gives the illusion that there's even less people playing than there currently is.
So if you had like a let's say we had like a barracks area, or like we said last week, the idea of a planet which had like our population on it, you know, the area where we're sort of growing civilization back again, and you had like a town square in there, so where people can congregate and meet up and get to know each other, all that sort of thing, and then off of that you had your own individual bunks, barracks, apartments, tents, whatever, where people can, you can then put rights on those to invite people back. So it's almost like a buddy list, but not, because it's like it's a visualization of that, where people can come in. So maybe doing it that way, like you say, a central hub area where everyone has to go to get to their individual place.
Yeah, that would be quite cool.
But yeah, just a little bit of an out there thought. So it'll be interesting to see what our listeners think of that one.
Yeah, time travel in general is a fantastically useful mechanism for telling a story.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Certainly wouldn't want to be using it practically.
No. So what I'm going to do now is play the interview with Alex about the Demolitionist class. So I'll go ahead and play that now. Hello, everyone. We figured it was time to have another class discussion on the show, so I'm joined today by Alex to discuss the Demolitionist class. So hey there, Alex.
Hi, everyone. And hi, John. Thanks for allowing me to appear on your show.
Oh, wow. Thanks for coming. You know, it's my pleasure. Thanks ever so much for taking the time out. So Alex, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
So I've been playing TR now for about 5 months. Mm-hmm. I'm one... No, actually, I just hit the five-month mark.
Ah, okay.
It's a great game. I love that it's different from anything that's out there right now. And it's dynamic. It's... Well... Wow.
It's very it just feels fast, doesn't it? And like you said, it is dynamic, and I had that wow factor with it the first time I logged in. It just made such a big impression on me that has stuck.
Me too. I mean, it was a little bit difficult adjusting to the skill tree and the combat, because I'm used to playing other MMOs like World of Warcraft and stuff like that, where if you move, you don't do any damage.
That's right.
And I found out it's not wise to stand and shoot in all battles. And I found that out the hard way.
Yeah, you do find that out the hard way, and it's not very apparent to you sort of straight away. You sort of learn that as you go, that actually moving around is quite important. And like we were discussing just before we started recording, that you do see new players doing this, don't you, just standing around.
Yes, yes, and I yell out to them, don't stand and shoot, move around. Move and fire, move and fire.
Yeah, you
Some really get it right away and start doing it. Others, not that fast.
So you play the Demolitionist class, or the Demo as we often call it, which is a tier 4 class, and it's down the Specialist branch after the Sapper role. So why do you favour the Demo over, say, the Engineer or indeed any other class?
Well, I don't know. I just, as a newbie, I started out the soldier skill tree, and I found it, wow, the machine gun, you rip through targets quickly, heavy armor, nice weapons, launchers, nice, decent area of effect abilities for the commando, as I have a level 16 commando. But then, out of curiosity, because I saw players wearing strange guns on their shoulders, leech guns,
as I found
out later they were called, and wanted to test out those guns. So I started down the specialist tree. I really had a hard time adjusting to how to use leech guns. But I got killed so many times.
So for anyone that's listening that doesn't know what a leech gun is, why don't you tell them a little bit about that?
a leech gun. A leech gun is a weapon that fires a continuous stream of energy at the target, damaging the target, and the damage and some of the damage the target takes goes back to you as health and armor regeneration, around the lines of 25% of damage that the target takes.
It's a very awesome gun. I do like it.
Oh, and higher pumps, dude. It's murderous.
It's brilliant. When I look at it, it reminds me a bit of you know the backpacks in Ghostbusters.
Yes.
They remind me of those, which is great. So it's fair to say that it is a damage dealer, but you do get this regen, don't you? So
yes.
You know. So what do you find your playstyle is with those?
Leech guns. I usually use used. I'm not using them anymore, regrettably.
Yeah.
In squads of 2 to 3 people, I kneel and start firing at a target. The squad gets regen, and they do all the damage, all the significant damage to the target.
Sure.
It's a wonderful class support weapon. Although tools do a better job than the leech gun at regen armor.
Yeah,
it's a nice thing to have, to deal a little bit of damage, help the squad kill the mini boss or something like that, and regen them at the same time. All in all, it's a wonderful weapon.
Yeah, it's good. It's quite sort of a rarity within the weapons, isn't it? It's nice to see that.
The second reason I chose the specialist class 3, because of the tools. I mean, self-repair is something I've gotten so accustomed to. It's painful to play my soldiers.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when I'm in a big battle and my armor's running low, with my demolitionist, I just pull out my repair tool and repair myself.
Excellent. I expect you get quite used to that.
Oh, yes. It's such a habit now because I have a grenadier and I have a guardian. Playing the guardian ain't such a difficult task because it has the reflex and those save your life. But the grenadier is for all-out massive group battles. And you know, you take all the fire from the enemies, and your arm goes down in a snap of a finger.
Yeah.
And I usually find myself pressing the number key assigned to my tools and my specialist and trying to heal myself.
Yeah, you get into the habit, don't you?
Oh yeah, it happens so often now.
So if we sort of go on to talk a bit about the different skills and abilities that we have with the demolitionist, but just before we do that, you know, there's been some sort of previous changes and that with the demo and where it's about to go. I mean, what do you think the demo should be heading towards as a class? Is there anything you're looking for in changes that are coming up or anything in particular?
Well, not much. The Demolitionist is a beautiful class now. Before the deployment 8, they nerfed it so badly. I mean, it was just frustrating to play. They repaired controlled fusion because it was bugged. I didn't have much qualms there.
Yeah.
But they halfened the damage. It did 28,000 points of damage to single targets and 8,000 points of damage to the other targets, depending on how far they were from the blast radius.
Wow!
And but there was a hitch. You couldn't really use it on low level targets because it didn't work properly. When you cast control fusion on a target and you start firing at that target, all the damage that target takes goes to the controlled fusion and none to its health.
Okay.
And armor. Before the deployment 1.7, this didn't happen.
Oh, that's right. They kind of brought a lot of changes in around that time, didn't they? And it was good to see it getting a bit of attention.
Yes, because not that it was frustrating, but when you're in a crowded situation and you want to cast a control fusion, clear the low levels out, you couldn't really do it because by the time you take your finger off the mouse button. The target would already be dead, and the control fusion wouldn't go off.
Yeah.
You'd lose. So that was frustrating, but it compensated with Reality Reaper because it had a massive amount of hit points then and did a decent amount of damage.
Yeah.
the target.
So you kind of feel like now it's at a place where you're really enjoying playing it again, and it's a lot of enjoyment.
Oh yes. Another issue I had is with another ability, self-destruct.
Yeah.
The way this works, you cast it on yourself mm-hmm. prior to 1.7. I'm talking now. Mm-hmm. You rush in a battle, first shot from an enemy, set it off. Mm-hmm. For CPs, it was wonderful because you cast it in the shields, go outside, blow up, mm-hmm. repair yourself, cast it again, go outside, blow up. It was a really nice ability for CPs.
Yeah.
But not much use outside that, because in a battle, you don't know in a crowded battlefield, you don't know where the next shot's going to come from.
No, absolutely.
So you might want to rush toward the group you see now, and someone from behind shoots you and detonates the ability before you actually do any get into its optimum range.
Okay.
Now they've changed it. You can detonate it yourself now.
Yeah, so it's got a bit of a it's almost like a toggle now, isn't it?
Yes, it's toggle on off. You cast it on yourself. Mm-hmm. Your position is remembered. Go towards the group. Recast it. Mm-hmm. Blow up and you teleport back to where you cast it the first time.
Excellent. That sounds much more effective.
So
whilst we're talking about the classes, then let's go on and go through all of those. So if we start with the signature weapon, which is the Polarity Gun. yeah, go ahead, go on, you wax lyrical about the Polarity Gun.
Oh yes, it's a wonderful weapon. I mean, it does significant damage over time to a target, but the sweet time is when you take your finger off the trigger, because mm-hmm. It sends a globe of energy toward the target, mm-hmm. which does massive damage, up to 24,000 points of damage to some targets. Depending, of course, on the level of Polarity Gun, your level, the level of your target.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's about, I think that sort of has a sweet spot of around the, is it 40 meters, that weapon?
Yes, 40 meters is the maximum effective range. Anything above that, the damage gets halved, split up three times less than the original damage. Mm-hmm. I have actually gone shooting targets up to 65 meters away.
Okay.
The dot damage isn't so obvious. I mean, it only does 800 points of damage for the level 43.
Yeah.
Polarity Gun, in its optimal range, it does, I don't know, on thumb 5, 2,000 points of dot. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not a long-range weapon, but you can get attention with it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Is it? Would you say it was expensive to use?
Before 1.6, I think, or 1.7, I don't know when it changed, it was horribly expensive to use. I mean, at level 18, you started using for the other types of damage, which is fire and ice polarity guns, improved grade canister ammunition. Mm. And at that level, to be using that kind of ammunition mm-hmm. is horribly expensive.
Yeah, very expensive.
I actually ended up using shotguns. And using the polarity guns in critical situations when I'm up against a Kale or up against a boss.
Yeah, I mean, this is a similar thing with chain guns, really, when you're not used to using those. Would you say this gun was quite difficult to master and get used to?
Yes, it is, because if you keep your finger too long on the trigger, mm-hmm. it overheats. Mm. And you really have to get used to that energy globe going out of the barrel, regardless if the target died due to the dot damage.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But that doesn't consume any extra ammunition, which is good.
Oh, okay, so that's like a little final free shot.
It's a free shot, but it's a hell of a shot.
Yeah, it is. So along with that, you get your signature ability, which is the explosive wave, isn't it?
Yes, wonderful ability, mm-hmm. but not really practical to be basing your attack on it, because you know it has a 5-minute cooldown. It's a wonderful emergency ability. Mm-hmm. When you've cast the controlled fusion and it's cooling down, you don't have time to cast and recast the self-destruct. Mm-hmm. You simply shift to that, press right click, and every target near you gets hit hard.
So that's like your get out of jail free card, that one, isn't it?
Yes. Although in a really crowded situation, it might not kill every target around you. Mm-hmm. It does take out four or five.
Okay. Okay, that's handy. So you mentioned controlled fishing quite a lot. So why don't you go ahead and talk about that? It seems to be something you use a bit.
Controlled fusion is the ability I built my demolitionist around.
Right, okay. So that's what your build's based on. Okay.
I've pumped it up as soon as I hit 30 to level 5. Mm-hmm. And man, it was super.
Yeah.
I did, however, have some complaints because the damage gets split up among targets in the area of effect. Before 1.7, the damage used to get heinously split up. I mean, 5 targets, they take, I don't know, 10,000 points of damage. Anything above that, 8,000 or less. I even saw targets take 500 points of damage from it.
Right. It has a bit of a delay before it casts, doesn't it?
It did have.
Yeah.
But now it doesn't. It. 1 second cast.
It's a 1 second cast now. Was that this patch? That was this patch, wasn't it?
This was this patch.
So does that make it a lot more effective? I expect it to change your playstyle even further if it's quicker to cast.
Yes, it does. It make more effect. Make it more effective because you don't really have to wait that long, and you don't take that amount the amount of damage you took before.
Yeah.
Because I've had times when I waited for the control fusion to cast and I got killed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
now
it was 10 seconds or something like that, wasn't it? It was a long time.
No, not really. The recycle time now is 5 seconds, I think.
Oh, no, for the Rikers, but I mean before it was 10 seconds the delay, wasn't it? Yeah, it was quite a while before it kicked in before, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
So that's great. I mean, you built your whole sort of build around that then. It's got quite a low power cost, if I remember rightly. And is it Micromex that uses?
A Spore Micromex. It's actually very cheap to cast
and
to use consumable when it comes to the consumables.
Yeah, excellent. You've already mentioned self-destruct, which is something you use. Would you say you used to use that at control points, from what I gather, but do you use that more so now that it's...
Every time I cast control fusion. The way I play now is I cast control fusion first, cast on myself self-destruct, leave it selected, because if you don't have it selected in your ability bar and try to detonate it, it won't detonate.
Ah, right, okay.
That's a good thing to remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
The target that has the dot on the control fusion on it, firing, of course. The control fusion goes off, it kills around 4 targets. But if I'm firing at higher levels, like 2-3 levels above me, no problem. Their armor will get discharged by then.
Brilliant.
So by the time I'm where the target was, I recast self-destruct and take them all out.
Excellent stuff. So it's a nice little combo, those two.
Yes, it's perfect now.
Brilliant. And would you say you go on to use any of the other demolitionist skills that often? Because we've got the explosive nanites. Is that something you use?
No, I've used it before on an alternate. I've deleted now.
Sure.
It's a wonderful single target ability. You cast that on a target, it helps your plurality gun quite a lot. Especially effective against Kale, if you might find that out.
So what it does is you cast it and it covers a single target with like nanites, doesn't it?
Yes, it covers a target in explosive nanites. It does sonic damage, which is good against the targets that are immune to physical.
Yeah, sure.
And you keep firing. It sets off 15 explosions before the target dies.
Oh, okay. Okay, so
it does medium high damage. It's really decent, but not for my taste.
Yeah, you'd rather be using the other two, by the sounds of it.
Yes. Yeah.
And what about Reality Ripper? Because what that does is that deploys a bomb, doesn't it? Which draws the enemies sort of into an area.
No, not really. Reality Ripper is like consider it a turret for an engineer. That draws in the targets to a tight space around it.
Okay.
And the targets usually focus on that one, on the Reality Ripper, instead of focusing on you.
Sure, yeah. So it draws quite a bit of aggro.
Yes. But I did say usually focus on.
Right, okay, so it doesn't work that well then.
It's bugged now, because before it used to drag all the targets its reach, mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. next to it. Now I've seen Bane run from it.
Oh, interesting.
When they should have not been able to move.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. It's kind of stressful now, mm-hmm. but it's still worth it. It does attract attention when you really need that attention away from you. Mm-hmm. The problem with it is now that before it had a lot of hit points.
Yeah.
And you couldn't destroy it easily. Due to the wish to balance classes in PvP, they've chopped that off. A lot of hit points are now gone, and the main usually kill it within 10 shots.
Oh, okay. So, sounds like you play quite a bit of PvE. Are you into PvP at all?
Yes, I do play a little PvP, but not with my demo. I've tuned this one with the idea of making it effective in PvE.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot of fun, actually, to run around yes. with that sort of build. Are there any sort of other things that you pull in from the lower level tiers to complete that build?
Oh, yes. From the sapper, mm-hmm. it's absolutely crucial that you max out shield extend mm-hmm. and polarity guns as soon as you can.
Yeah.
Mech
yeah.
armor, you should get it at around 3 by 30, level 30.
Yeah.
Because it does help power regeneration.
Absolutely.
Ditched firearms, ditched leech guns,
okay.
and stuck to polarity guns.
Okay.
You know, at level 15, that's the weapon that you'll stick with all the way through the game mm-hmm. For a specialist.
That's your favorite, yeah.
Yes, it's my favorite weapon of the game. I do like staffs, of course. I do like blades. But polarity gun... it's like, you know, you grow attached to it, the damage it does, mm. and the way it kills target.
Yeah. They've just made a little tweak to the crab mines as well. Is that something that you use at all?
Crab mines I did use before, but since I've created this one to be an area of effect specialist, mm-hmm. I've actually had to ditch them too. But I do have another demolitionist. Mm-hmm. That one is 42, I think. Mm-hmm. It does have crab mines, and I must say they are very, very effective now.
Yeah, they've made some sort of they made them a bit sort of snappier, haven't they? They sort of react a bit better.
Yes.
In the last patch, from what I gather.
And they do a little bit more damage, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay. Brilliant.
But they're really decent now. A skill I would not recommend. From the sapper and the demolitionist would be hack. Hack if you're not in a area that's crawling with machina or striders or stalkers like that. It's pretty much useless.
Yeah, it's quite a specific ability, isn't it?
Although it is fun to see a strider turn against the Bane.
Excellent. It's always good. They always look so impressive. I remember when we had them spawn for us in the base. They looked fantastic running around the base. They're pretty impressive.
Yep. And they pack a punch. So
they do.
An advice to all players that want to go specialist. Don't kamikaze a strider. Never, ever do that.
This is good advice.
Oh, it hurts. It hurts.
Well,
you can charge stalkers because, yeah, they do damage, but not the amount of damage that striders did.
No, that's right. That's right. They're pretty insane.
Now they've made the devs have made the striders a little more survivable. Mm-hmm. Although I didn't encounter one yet. And if I do want to encounter one, I want to encounter one that's higher level than I am.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I haven't actually tested that out myself yet, actually. That's interesting, because they did say they made some changes to those. So we shall see how we can deal with that. So that gives us a really good idea of how you play your build. And it sounds like you really, really enjoy it. Is there any, sort of any other things that are important for budding demolitionists out there?
Yes. The attributes are just as important as the skills. But be warned, if you make your demolitionist an area of effect specialist, it will not be effective against riders and stalkers as much as if when you use hack and explosive nanites.
Yeah, so it's very much a tool for the job situation.
Yes, although I enjoy the demolitionist, its area of effect abilities, it is kind of hard to take down a strider or a stalker, but an EMP bomb or control fusion thrown in there would usually take care of the job real fast.
Brilliant.
The polarity guns now are tweaked so they do a little more damage. They actually work better against juggernauts, against striders I've seen, against stalkers. But I'm going off subject.
That's all right.
The attributes. You really should think it through before you start making a demolitionist. Mine is kind of wishy-washy when it comes to the attributes, because although I want a demolitionist to wipe out large groups fast, I don't want a demolitionist that's a wimp and dies fast.
No.
So if you're going for a full mind build, I suggest you make a demolitionist first that balances out mind and body. And when you reach 50 F course, clone and then go for the full mind build. As a race for the demolitionist, I'd really recommend both human and Forian. Forian is a must.
Oh, really? Okay, because you've got the extra points there.
Yeah, you've got +3 per level. A default of +3 per level towards mind, +2 towards spirit, but a +1 towards body. So when playing a Forian, keep in mind you really have to invest a lot of points in body.
Yeah.
So you make it survivable, because, of course, you can invest all your points into mind.
No, absolutely.
It will do a horrifying amount of damage, but it will die within 20 shots.
Which is not what we want.
No. In a PvE and both a PvP.
Yeah, absolutely.
Content, you don't want that. I do have a Forian clone as a demolitionist. It's based on roughly the same abilities, except now I've maxed out the self-destruct and put in 3 nanites.
Okay.
It does work quite well against single targets. But of course, you sacrifice the massive area of effect capabilities, and it is kind of a hassle trying to take out large groups.
Yeah.
But then again, that's why it's called a specialist.
This is true. So, do you actually? It's interestingly, how do you find you sort of fit in with to group play and clan play? Do you find there's a lot of demolitionists in your clan or in your groups, or do you find that you're quite a sort of a rare class choice?
Well, before deployment 1.8, I counted in the 4 months I played, I counted about 5 demolitionists, which I know and seen in combat, and they were investing their skills sporadically, so they weren't so effective, but decent. Now, two of my clan mates have turned demolitionist. One's level 45, one's level 40, I think. They're really enjoying it, because I think I got them into trying it. I actually spent a large amount of time advertising the class.
That's good. Because you do have to sort of stick up for your class choice, don't you? And sort
yes.
of tell people about it. And it's great that you've sort of got this opportunity now to do it as well. And, you know, it's sort of in general, sort of in times with that, and sort of sticking up for your class, do you find that you get that's challenging at times? Do you find people also say, oh, I'm not playing that?
No. Actually, surprisingly, I'm pleasurably surprised that not. No one has said that.
Yeah.
But someone said, oh, it's a good class, but I'll stick to my spy.
Yeah.
Of course, I have nothing against that. They specialize in spies. I have seen spies killing guardians with a full mind build in 3 hits. and a full body build. Of course, spies are good.
Yeah.
But in a crowded situation, I'd recommend Grenadier and Demolitionist.
Brilliant. Brilliant. But I mean, that is the advantage of this game, isn't it? We can have these choices. We've got the ability to make these choices, and then you can find out what you like to play. So it's good. I think it's definitely a class that I'm going to give more attention to. Just sort of generally on a Tabula Rasa note, you know, if you were sort of trying to encourage people to come and try the game out or give it a go that haven't tried it, would you have any advice to them at all?
Yes. Be open to new things, because Tabula Rasa is different than any other MMO on the market right now.
Yeah.
Any other MMORPG, of course, because there are other types. It's definitely different than WoW. Mm-hmm. So for WoW players coming to the game, the advice is never, ever stand and shoot.
Yeah. Get used to moving about.
Yes. But that's what I like about the game. Because you have all this dynamic, all the dynamics of a first-person shooter. Mm-hmm. Molded perfectly with the role-playing game. In my opinion, I've seen people, I've tried to convince some of my friends to play it, and they said, whoa, this is too difficult, how can you get used to it?
It's interesting, it's a unique experience, and I wouldn't say it was difficult, I just think you need to play it for a little bit longer than you would initially play a game to get into it.
I think yes.
You sort of need to give it a little bit more time.
Yes, you do need to be a little more patient, because in an MMO just like WoW, you know the rules. Stand with the opponents, see who wins.
Yes.
In this game, that's not how it works. You really need to move around, get behind cover, think how you're going to a battle. You just can't go kamikaze in a battle because you're level 35 and the monsters are 29 to 33. They'll still rip you apart if there are enough of them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Things like that I don't see in WoW or something like that. When you're 45 and going into a level 38 area, you don't really feel the pressure as much.
It's just the same mechanic as when you were down at the lower levels, isn't it? You just do the same old thing. It's just that the mobs are higher and you're higher.
Yes. Well, as a good example, I'm level 47. Mm-hmm. If I get surrounded by 30 or 20... level 41 mobs, I die. And if I just sit and time how much damage I can take before I croak. In WoW, I tried the same thing, and I was playing a mage, which is one of the weakest classes.
Yeah, very squishy.
I didn't take as much damage, and I killed everyone around me with just one cast, area of effect cast.
Interesting.
Here, you do have to respect the rules of how much the damage gets split up between targets. Because I actually am in situations when I throw controlled fusion, and there are like 15 Bane, and 5 of them die, but the rest are still standing.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's the difference, isn't it? It's just huge.
Yes. People should not get cocky walking around, I'm 45, I'll kill these level 40s in a flash. No, you won't. You'll die a humiliating death.
But you still come back out fighting, don't you?
Yes. I love about Tabula Rasa the transit system. Because, I'm talking about, people will hate me for this, but...
It's all right.
The only transit system you had there was those flying things, and the Hearthstone.
Yeah.
But in Tabula Rasa, to be able to place down a waypoint, be it squad or personal, anywhere on the map, and go to any other point that you've acquired, is actually super, because you don't have to get on a mound and go through all the map. All the same scenery.
It makes your experience much more enjoyable. I mean, even down to sort of an instance level. If you drop a squad teleport in the instance near the hard bit, that you've got a sticky bit, and there's a teleport right at the back. So if you do die, you can jump straight back into the action and help out without feeling like you're left out from your group play. And you get that time to sort of come in and using that all over the map is just excellent, and it really really does work well. And I'm never without personal waypoints. I've always got some on me.
I found myself actually three times now. I ran out of personal waypoints.
Yeah.
Just when I needed them most.
Isn't that always the way?
I found myself cursing like hell.
If only I had a waypoint to go and get some more waypoints.
Yes. That's exactly the bit I'm talking about. As for players that want to try out Demolitionist class, you really have to think, watch what you are designing him for. Mm-hmm. You want to be able to take out Striders and Stalkers? Good. Go full hack. By the way, hack is pretty much useless unless pump 3.
Okay.
Go full hack, explosive nanites. Mm-hmm. You can turn actually one vehicle against each other. It's really fun. See them shoot each other. And the nanites really help your priority gun damage. You stab their health really fast. Mm. Other classes, I have. If someone asks me that, I have played Rangers. Mm-hmm. I have a Guardian. He's level 37. Mm-hmm. A Grenadier. And a soon-to-be engineer, because I'm fouled up my class choice when I was 30.
Right. Yeah, I think we've all done that one time or another, haven't we?
Man, I wanted to go to the engineer trainer and I wound up back at the Demolitionist.
Oh, no. It's frustrating.
You can't even begin to imagine what words came out of my mouth.
Oh, I can. Yeah, that's brilliant. Well, listen, Alex, that's fantastic. I mean, that's really, really gives us a good insight into the Demolitionist class, and it's great that you enjoy playing it so much. And it's always nice to hear what people have to say about something they feel passionate about. You know, and it's quite often the case. We hear a lot about the spy and the sniper, don't we? So it's good to hear your point of view on this class, and thank you very much for taking the time to join me today.
No problem. Thanks for allowing me to be here, and I hope the Tabula Cast will see at least episode number 2000.
Me too. Thanks very much, Alex.
Yeah, thank
cheers
you.
bye.
So
thanks very much, Alex, for that, taking the time to talk to me on that one. And I think we'll go ahead and wrap up, Matt. I think that's about it for today. So thanks for everyone for listening and downloading, and we'll catch you again next time. Thanks again to Matt.
Yay, thanks for me.
And we'll see ya.
Ta-ra.
Do it, 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 do it now. Say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it, say it now.
one of